It's time now for Living Theology, a weekly program in which Dr. John B. McDonald seeks to equip and encourage you to become more like Jesus Christ, living with competence and joy. With today's episode, here's Dr. McDonald.
We continue our series on reclaiming worship with this question: what do you do when you find an idol in your life? Let me start by quoting the last words of the Apostle John in 1 John 5, verse 21. He writes, "Dear children, keep yourselves from idols." The dear children are Christians to whom he is writing. The word keep, as in keep yourselves from idols, is sometimes rendered guard. It's the same word used, for example, of a Roman soldier guarding Paul in Acts 28, verse 16. It evokes vigilance, seriousness, and commitment to protect someone or something from a hostile force. John knew the imminent danger of idols encroaching into our lives as followers of Jesus. Now remember our definition: an idol is whatever claims the loyalty that belongs to God alone. If we let down our guard, we're vulnerable to idols of all kinds. So what do you do when you find an idol in your life? Let's look at a few principles drawn from the life of a king of Judah, King Asa. He was, in my words, an idol buster. At some point, take a moment to read a piece of his life, 2 Chronicles chapter 15. That chapter begins with a message from God in the form of the prophet Azariah, son of Obed. The prophet met Asa and said, "Listen to me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. The Lord is with you when you are with him. If you seek him, he will be found by you. But if you forsake him, he will forsake you." This is the restatement of a well-known principle throughout Scripture. We enjoy the company or presence of God when we seek him. That presence forsakes us when we forsake him. The presence of idols in our lives is evidence of forsaking the one true God. A couple of weeks ago, the person leading the singing at church made a statement several times that struck me as wrong. That person said, "We should ask God to draw near to us." To my knowledge, we are not asked to ask God to draw near to us, as if it's up to God to do all the moving when it's us who are in the wrong place. We are directed to respond first and act intentionally. In James 4, verse 8, we read, "Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you." And yet, God does take the initiative. He sends a message, and that message is a recognition of distance and an invitation to return to intimacy. When we hear God's message, it's up to us to respond by seeking and drawing near to him. How does Asa respond? And how should we respond? King Asa responded to God's message this way. When Asa heard these words, he took courage. He removed the detestable idols from the whole land. He also deposed his grandmother Maacah from her position as queen mother because she made a repulsive Asherah pole. Asa cut the pole down, broke it up, and burned it in the Kidron Valley. We read that in 2 Chronicles 15, verses 8 and 16. What can we learn from Asa's response? Well, here are two main things I observe. First, he took courage. In other words, he grew firm and was strengthened to take action. He did not ask God to do. He did what God asked. God put his finger on the problem of Israel's distance, idolatry. And he called Israel, and Asa in particular, to do something about that problem. So we have to be proactive when we discover an idol in our life. Second, he removed the idols from the whole land. Let's see how Asa did that and what we can learn from three related texts. First, in 2 Chronicles 14, verse 3, we read he smashed the sacred stones and cut down the Asherah poles. Second, he deposed his grandmother because of her idolatry. 2 Chronicles 15, verse 16. And third, in that same verse, he cut the pole down, broke it up, and burned it. Asa's actions were thorough and uncompromising. First, it involved the whole land. So when we're speaking about our lives, no nook or cranny of our lives is exempt from the removal of idols. It involves our thoughts, our home, our entertainment, our work, everything. Second, the idols were destroyed. They weren't stored somewhere behind lock and key for ready access at some future time. They were smashed, they were cut down, they were broken up, they were burned. In short, Asa was an idol buster. They were never used again. So we need to deal with idols in our lives with finality, not harboring some possibility that we may want the idol to return, even for a short time. Third, close family members are not exempt from this purging. Family hierarchy and connections are distant seconds to cleansing your life from idols. I recall a Christian within a family that dabbled with fortune tellers and Ouija boards. Despite the family's expectation of his participation in what it considered to be a bit of harmless fun, that young follower of Jesus had to separate himself from his family in those activities. In that case, it was a choice between distance from God or distance from family. And yet sometimes more than removal of idols is needed. You've heard that nature abhors a vacuum. It wants to fill it. The same is true of our lives. The clean, empty space left in your life needs to be filled when you remove idols. But what do you fill it with? We'll continue this in the next podcast. We've been looking at three R's for idol busters. We've touched on two, recognition of idols and removal of idols. In the next podcast, we'll expand on removal, particularly of idols that aren't so physical, such as prosperity, sex, or family, and introduce the third R.
You've been listening to John B. McDonald in Living Theology, a program designed to equip and encourage you to become more like Jesus Christ. Dr. McDonald has an extensive online writing ministry. To learn more about John and his work, follow the links on the producer's page at HopeStreamRadio.com.